waves of sound. But she was still. A bit of rock in a stream. Breakfast passed. And when it was done, in the quiet of the kitchen, the sounds sorted out into voices. A murmur. Malachi. A laugh. Emrys. Look, Emrys said, coming up to where Selena stood at the kitchen sink, still staring out at the field. Look what Malachi bought me. She caught the flash of the golden hilt before she understood Emrys was holding out a new knife. It was a joke. The gods had to be playing a joke. Or they just truly, truly hated her. The hilt was engraved with lotus blossoms, a ripple of lapis lazuli edging the bottom like a river wave. Emrys was smiling, eyes bright. But that knife, the gold polished and bright. I got it from a merchant from the southern continent, Malachi said from the table, his satisfied tone enough to tell her that he was beaming. It came all the way from Ilwe. The numbness snapped. Snapped with such a violent crack that she was surprised they didn't hear it. And in its place was a screaming, high-pitched and keening, loud as a tea kettle, loud as a storm wind, loud as the sound the maid had emitted the morning she'd walked into Selena's parents' bedroom and seen the child lying between their corpses. It was so loud that she could hardly hear herself as she said, I do not care. She couldn't hear anything over that silent screaming, so she raised her own voice, breath coming fast, too fast, as she repeated, I do not care. Silence. Then Luca warily said from across the room, Alentia, don't be rude. Alentia. Alentia. Spirit that cannot be broken. Lies. 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 Nehemia had lied about everything. About her stupid name, about her plans, about every damn thing. And she was gone. All that Selena would have left of her were reminders like this. Weapons similar to the ones the princess had worn with such pride. Nehemia was gone, and she had nothing left. Trembling so hard she thought her body would fall apart at the seams, she turned. I do not care about you, she hissed to Emrys and Malachi and Luca. I do not care about your knife. I do not care about your stories or your little kingdom. She pinned Emrys with a stare. Luca and Malachi were across the room in an instant, stepping in front of the old man, teeth bared. Good. They should feel threatened. So leave me alone. Keep your goddamned lives to yourself and leave me alone! She was shouting now, but she couldn't stop hearing the screaming, couldn't hone the anger into anything, couldn't tell which way was up or down. Only that Nehemia had lied about everything, and her friend once had sworn an oath not to. Sworn an oath and broken it. Just as she'd broken Selena's own heart the day she let herself die. She saw the tears in Emrys's eyes then. Sorrow or pity or anger, she didn't care. Luca and Malachi were still between them, growling softly. A family. They were a family, and they stuck together. They would rip her apart if she hurt one of them. Selena let out a low, joyless laugh as she took in the three of them. Emrys opened his mouth to say whatever it was he thought would help. But Selena let out another dead laugh and walked out the door. After an entire night of tattooing the names of the fallen onto Gavriel's flesh, and listening to the warrior talk about the men he'd lost, Rowan sent him on his way and headed for the kitchen. He found it empty save for the ancient male, who sat at the empty work table, hands wrapped around a mug. Emrys looked up, his eyes bright and grieving. The girl was nowhere to be seen, and for a heartbeat he hoped she'd left again, if only so he didn't have to face what he'd said yesterday. The door to the outside was open, as if someone had thrown it wide. She'd probably gone that way. Rowan took a step toward it, nodding his greeting, but the old male looked him up and down and quietly said,
"What are you doing?"
"What?"
Emrys didn't raise his voice as he said,
"To that girl. What are you doing that makes her come in here with such emptiness in her eyes?"
"That's none of your concern."
Emrys pressed his lips into a tight line.
"What do you see when you look at her, Prince?"
He didn't know. These days he didn't know a damn thing.
"That's none of your concern either."
Emrys ran a hand over his weathered face.
"I see her slipping away, bit by bit. Because you shove her down when she so desperately needs someone to help her back up. I don't see why I would be of any use to... Did you know that Evelyn Ashriver was my friend? She spent almost a year working in this kitchen, living here with us, fighting to convince your queen that Demi-Fay have a place in your realm. She fought for our rights until the very day she departed this kingdom. And the many years after, until she was murdered by those monsters across the sea. So I knew. I knew who her daughter was the moment you brought her into this kitchen. All of us who were here 25 years ago recognized her for what she is."
It wasn't often that he was surprised, but Rowan just stared.
"She has no hope, Prince. She has no hope left in her heart. Help her. If not for her sake, then at least for what she represents. What she could offer all of us, you included."
"And what is that?"
he dared ask. Emrys met his gaze unflinchingly as he whispered,
"A better world."
Selena walked and walked, until she found herself by the tree-lined shore of a lake, glaringly bright in the midday sun. She figured it was as good a spot as any as she crumpled to the mossy bank, as her arms wrapped tight around herself, and she bowed over her knees. There was nothing that could be done to fix her. And she was... A whimpering noise came out of her, lips trembling so hard she had to clamp down to keep the sound inside. But the sound was in her throat, and her lungs, and her mouth. And when she took a breath, it cracked out. Once she heard it, everything came spilling into the world, until her body ached with the force of it. She vaguely felt the light shifting on the lake. Vaguely felt the sighing wind, warm as it brushed against her damp cheeks. And heard, so soft it was as if she dreamed it, a woman's voice, whispering, "Why are you crying, Fireheart?" It had been 10 years. 10 long years since she had heard her mother's voice. But she heard it then over the force of her weeping, as clear as if she knelt beside her.
"Fireheart, why do you cry?"
"Because I am lost," she whispered onto the earth. "And I do not know the way."
It was what she had never been able to tell Nehemia, that for 10 years she had been unsure how to find the way home, because there was no home left. Storm winds and ice crackled against her skin before she registered Rowan sitting down beside her, legs out, palms braced behind him in the moss. She raised her head, but didn't bother to wipe her face as she stared across the glittering lake.
You want to talk about it?
He asked.
No.
Swallowing a few times, she yanked a handkerchief from her pocket and blew her nose, her head clearing with each breath. They sat in silence. No sound but the quiet lapping of the lake on the mossy bank and the wind in the leaves. Then,
good. Because we're going.
Bastard. She called him as much, and then asked,
going where?
He smiled grimly.
I think I've started to figure you out, Aelin Galathinius.
What in every burning ring of hell? Selena panted, gazing at the cave mouth nestled into the base of the craggy mountain. Are we doing here? It had been a 5-mile hike, uphill, with hardly anything in her stomach. The trees butted against the gray stones, flowing up the slope for a ways, and then fading into lichen-covered rock that eventually turned into the snow-capped peak that marked the barrier between Wendlin and Doranel beyond. For some reason, this hulking giant made the hair on her neck stand up, and it had nothing to do with the frozen wind. Rowan strode into the gaping maw of the cave mouth, his pale gray cloak flapping behind him.
Hurry up.
Pulling her own cloak tighter around her, she staggered after him. This was a bad sign. A horrible sign, actually, because whatever was in that cave. She walked into the dark, following Rowan by the light on his hair, letting her eyes adjust. The ground was rocky, the stones small and worn smooth, and littered with rusted weapons, armor, and clothes. No skeletons. Gods, it was so cold that she could see her breath. See, tell me I'm hallucinating. Rowan had stopped at the edge of an enormous frozen lake, stretching into the gloom. Sitting on a blanket in its center, the chains around his wrists anchored under the ice, was Luca. Luca's chains clanked as he raised a hand in greeting.
I thought you'd never show! I'm freezing! He called,
and tucked his hands back under his arms. The sound echoed throughout the chamber. The thick sheet of ice covering the lake was so clear that she could see the water beneath. Pale stones on the bottom, what looked to be old roots from trees long dead, and no sign of life whatsoever. An occasional sword or dagger or lance poked up from the stones. What is this place?
Go get him, was Rowan's answer.
Are you out of your mind? Rowan gave her a smile that suggested he was, in fact, insane. She stepped toward the ice, but he blocked her path with a muscled arm.
In your other form.
Luca's head was angled, as if trying to hear. He doesn't know what I am, she murmured.
You've been living in a fortress of demi-fae, you know. He won't care.
That was the least of her concerns, anyway. How dare you drag him into this?
You dragged him in yourself when you insulted him and Emrys. The least you can do is retrieve him.
He blew out a breath toward the lake, and the ice thawed by the shore, then hardened.
Holy gods.
He'd frozen the whole damn lake. He was that powerful?
I hope you brought snacks, Luca said.
I'm starving. Hurry up, Alentia. Rowan said you had to do this as part of your training, and he prattled on and on. What is the goddamned point of this? Just punishment for acting like an ass?
You can control your power in human form. Keep it dormant. But the moment you switch, the moment you get agitated or angry or afraid, the moment you remember how much your power scares you, your magic rises up to protect you. It doesn't understand that you are the source of those feelings. not some external threat. When there is an outside threat, when you forget to fear your power long enough, you have control. Or some control.
He pointed again to the sheet of ice between her and Luca.
So free him.
If she lost control, if her fire got out of her, well, fire and ice certainly went well together, didn't they? What happens to Luca if I fail?
He'll be very cold and very wet, and possibly die.
From the smile on his face, she knew he was enough of a sadist to let the boy go under with her. Were the chains really necessary? He'll go right to the bottom. A stupid, bleeding kind of panic was starting to fill her veins. When she held out her hand for the key to Luca's chains, Rowan shook his head.
Control is your key, and focus. Cross the lake, then figure out how to free him without drowning the both of you.
Don't give me a lesson like you're some mystical nonsense master. This is the stupidest thing I have ever had to—
Hurry,
Rowan said with a wolfish grin, and the ice gave a collective groan, as if it was melting. Though some small voice in her head told her he wouldn't let the boy drown, she couldn't trust him, not after last night. She took one step closer to the ice.
You are a bastard.
When Luca was safely home, she would start finding ways to make Rowan's life a living hell. She punched through her inner veil, the pain barely registering as her features shifted.
I was waiting to see your fey form, Luca said. We were all taking bets on when...
And on and on. She scowled at Rowan, his tattoo even more detailed now that she was seeing it with fey eyes.
It gives me comfort to know that people like you have a special place in hell waiting for them.
Tell me something I don't already know. She gave him a particularly vulgar gesture as she stepped onto the ice. As she took each tentative step, small ones at first, she could see the lake bottom sloping away into darkness, swallowing the spread of lost weapons. Luca had finally shut up. It was only when she stepped past the visible edge of the rocky shelf and hovered over the dark depths that her breath hitched. She slid her foot, and the ice groaned. Groaned and cracked, spiderwebbing under her foot. She froze, gaping like a fool as the crack spread wider and wider. And then, she kept moving. There was another crack beneath her boots.
Did the ice move?
Stop it, she hissed at Rowan, but didn't dare look behind her. Her magic shuddered awake, and she went still as death.
No.
But there it was, filling up the spaces in her. The ice emitted a deep groan that could only mean something cold and wet was coming her way really damn soon, and she took another step, if only because the way back seemed like it would shatter. She was sweating now. The magic. The fire was warming her from the inside out.
Valentia?
Luca asked. And she held out a hand toward him, a silent gesture to shut his stupid mouth as she closed her eyes and breathed, imagining the cold air around them filling her lungs, freezing over the well of power.
Magic.
It was magic. In Otterlin, it was a death trap. She clenched her hands into fists. Here it was not a death trap. In this land she could have it, could wear whatever form she wished. The ice stopped groaning, but it had clouded and thinned around her. She started sliding her feet, keeping as balanced and fluid as she could, humming a melody, a bit of a symphony that used to calm her. She let the beat anchor her, dull the edge of her panic. The magic simmered to embers, pulsing with each breath.
I am safe, she told it. Relatively safe.
If Rowan was right, and it was just a reaction to protect her from some enemy. Fire was the reason she'd been banned from the Library of Orinth when she was 8. After accidentally incinerating an entire bookcase of ancient manuscripts, when she grew irritated with the master scholar lecturing her about decorum. It had been a beautiful, horrible relief to wake up one day not too many months after that, and no magic was gone. That she could hold a book, hold what she adored most, and not worry about turning it to ash if she became upset or tired or excited. Selena Sardothian, gloriously mortal Selena, never had to worry about accidentally scorching a playmate or having a nightmare that might incinerate her bedroom or burning all of Orinth to the ground. Selena had been everything Aelin wasn't. She had embraced that life, even if Selena's accomplishments were death and torture and pain.
Valentia?
She'd been staring at the ice. Her magic flickered again. Burning a city to the ground. That was the fear she overheard Melisande's emissary hiss at her parents and uncle. She'd been told he had come to see about an alliance, but she later understood he'd really come to gather information on her. Melisande had a young queen on its throne, and she wanted to assess the threat she might face from the heir of Terrasen one day. Wanted to know if Aelin Galathinius would become a weapon of war. The ice fogged over, and a crack splintered through the air. The magic was pulsing its way out of her, snapping its jaws at every breath she took.
"You are in control now," Rowan said from the shore. "You are its master."
She was halfway there. She took one more step toward Luca, and the ice cracked further. His chains rustled. Impatience or fear? She had never been in control. Even as Selena, control had been an illusion. Other masters had held her reins.
"You are the keeper of your own fate,"
Rowan said softly from the shore, as if he knew exactly what was flowing through her head. She hummed some more, the music wending its way from her memory. And somehow the flame grew quiet. Selena took a step forward, then another. The power smoldering in her veins would never go away. She was far more likely to hurt someone if she didn't master it. She scowled over her shoulder at Rowan, who was now striding along the shore, examining some of the fallen blades. There was a hint of triumph in his usually hollow eyes. But he turned away and approached a small crevice in the cave wall, feeling for something inside. She kept walking, the watery abyss deepening. She had mastered her mortal body as an assassin. Mastering her immortal power was just another task. Luca's eyes were wide as she came at last within touching distance.
"You have nothing to hide, you know. We all knew you could shift anyway," he said. "And if it makes you feel any better, Sten's animal form is a pig. He won't even shift for shame."
She would have laughed, actually felt her insides tighten to bark out the sound that had been buried for months. But then she remembered the chains around his wrists. The magic had quieted down, but now, melt through them? Or melt the ice where they were anchored and let him drag the chains back? If she went for the ice, she could easily send them right to the bottom of this ancient lake. And if she went for the chains, well, she could lose control and send them to the bottom, but she could also wind up burning him. At best, branding him where the manacles were. At worst, melting his bones. Better to risk the ice. Luca said. "I'll forgive every awful thing you said earlier if we can go eat something right now. It smells awful in here." His senses had to be sharper than hers.
The cave had only a faint hint of rust, mold, and rotting things.
Just hold still and stop talking, she said,
more sharply than she'd intended. But he shut up as she eased to the spot where Rowan had frozen the chains.
As carefully as she could, she knelt, spreading her weight out evenly.
She slid one palm against the ice, eyeing the chain's path to the hanging length swaying in the water beneath.
Swaying. There must be a current,
which meant Rowan had to be constantly sealing the ice.
The cold bit into her palm, and she eyed Luca on the fur blanket before she turned back to the anchor. If the ice broke, she'd have to grab him. Rowan was out of his damned mind.
She took several long breaths, letting the magic calm and cool and gutter. Then, hand pressed flat against the ice, she crooked an inner finger at her power and pulled out a tiny, burning thread. It flowed down her arm, snaked around her wrist, and then settled in her palm, her skin warming, the ice glowing a bright red.
Luca yelped as the ice splintered around them. Control!
Rowan barked from the shore, pulling free a discarded sword from where it had been knocked into the little crevice in the wall, its golden hilt glinting. Selena clamped on the magic so hard it suffocated. A small hole had melted where her palm had been, but not all the way through. Not big enough to free the chain. She could master this. She could master herself again. The well inside of her filled up, and she pushed back, willing only that thread to squeeze free and into the ice, burrowing like a worm, gnawing away at the cold. There was a clank of metal, and a hiss, and then,
oh, thank gods,
Luca moaned, hauling the length of the chain out of the hole. She spooled the thread of power back into herself, into that well, and was suddenly cold.
Please tell me you brought food, Luca said again. Is that why you came? Rowan promised you snacks?
I'm a growing boy. He winced when he looked at Rowan.
And you don't say no to him.
No, indeed. No one ever said no to him.
And that was probably why Rowan thought a scheme like this was acceptable.
Selena sighed through her nose and looked at the small hole she'd made. A feat. A miracle. As she was about to stand and help Luca navigate the way back to shore, she glanced at the ice once more. No, not the ice. The water beneath, where a giant red eye was staring right at her.
Chapter 35. The next four words that came out of Selena's mouth were so vulgar that Luca choked. But Selena didn't move as a massive, jagged white line gleamed unnervingly far from that red eye.
Get off the ice, now, she breathed to Luca.
Because that jagged white line, those were teeth. Big, rip-your-arm-off-in-one-bite teeth. And they were floating up from the depths, toward the hole she'd made.
That was why there were no skeletons. Only the weapons that had failed the fools who'd wandered into this cave. Holy gods, Luca said, peering from behind her. What is that?
Shut up and go, she hissed. On the shore, Rowan's eyes were wide, his face strained beneath his tattoo. He hadn't realized this lake wasn't empty.
Now, Luca,
Rowan growled, his sword out, the blade he'd swiped from the ground still sheathed in his other hand. It was swimming toward them, lazily, curious. As it neared, she could make out a snaking body as pale as the stones on the bottom of the lake. She'd never seen anything so huge, so ancient, and there was only a thin layer of ice keeping her separated from it. When Luca started trembling, his tan skin going pale, Selena surged to her feet, the ice groaning.
Don't look down,
she said, gripping his elbow. A patch of thicker ice hardened under their feet and spread, a path for the shore.
Go,
she told the boy, giving him a light shove. He started into a swift shuffle slide. She let him get ahead, giving him time so she could guard his back, and glanced down again. She swallowed her shout as a scaled, massive head stared up at her. Not a dragon or a wyvern, not a serpent or a fish, but something in between. It was missing an eye, the flesh scarred around the empty socket. What in hell had done that? Was there something worse down there, swimming at the belly of the mountain? Of course. Of course she'd be left unarmed in the center of a lake lined with weapons.
Faster,
Rowan barked. Luca was already halfway to the shore. Selena broke into Luca's same shuffle slide, not trusting herself to stay upright if she ran. Just as she took her third step, a flash of bone white snapped up through the depths, twisting like a striking asp. The long tail whipped against the ice, and the world bounced. She went up, legs buckling as the ice lifted from the blow, and then slammed onto her hands and knees. Selena shoved down the magic that arose to protect and burn and maim. She scrambled and veered aside as the scaly horned head hurtled toward the ice near her feet. The surface jolted. Farther out, but getting closer, the ice was breaking, as if all of Rowan's concentration was now spent on keeping a thin bridge of ice frozen between her and the shore.
Weapon!
She gasped out, not daring to take her attention off the creature.
Hurry!
Rowan barked, and Selena lifted her head long enough to see him slide the blade he'd found across the ice, a brisk wind spinning it toward her. Luca abandoned the blanket, shuffle running, and Selena scooped up the golden hilt of the sword as she followed him. A ruby the size of a chicken egg was embedded in the hilt, and despite the age of the scabbard, the blade shone when she whipped it free, as if it had been freshly polished. Something clattered from the scabbard onto the ice. A plain golden ring. She grabbed it, shoving it into her pocket, and ran faster as... The ice lifted again, the boom of that mighty tail as horrific as the moving surface beneath her. Selena stayed up this time, sinking onto her haunches as she clutched the sword, part of her marveling at the balance and beauty of it. But Luca, slipping and sliding, went down. She reached him in a few heartbeats, hauling him up by the back of his tunic and gripping him tight as the ice lifted again and again and again. They got past the drop-off, and she almost groaned with relief at the sight of the pale stone shelf beneath their feet. The ice behind them exploded up, freezing water showering them. And then... She didn't stop as those nostrils huffed, didn't stop hauling Luca toward Rowan, whose brow gleamed with sweat as massive talons scraped over the ice, gouging four deep lines. She dragged the boy the last 10 yards, then 5. Then they were on the shore and to Rowan, who let out a shuddering breath. Selena turned in time to see something out of a nightmare trying to crawl onto the ice, its one red eye wild with hunger, its massive teeth promising a brutal and cold kind of death. As Rowan's sigh finished sounding, the ice melted, and the creature plunged below. Back on solid ground, suddenly aware that the ice had also been a barrier. Selena again grabbed Luca, who was looking ready to vomit, and bolted from the cave. There was nothing keeping that creature from climbing out of the water, and the sword was about as useful as a toothpick against it. Who knew how fast it could move on land? Luca was chanting a steady stream of prayers to various gods, as Selena yanked him down the rocky path and into the glaring afternoon sun, stumbling near blind until they hit the murky woods, dodging trees mostly by luck, faster and faster downhill. And then, a roar that shook the stones and sent the birds scattering into the air, the leaves rustling. But a roar of rage and hunger, not of triumph, as if the creature had reached the edge of the cave and, after millennia in the watery dark, could not withstand the sunshine. She didn't want to consider, as they kept running from the echoing roar, what might have happened if it had been night, what still might happen at nightfall. After a while, she sensed Rowan behind them, yet she cared only for her young charge, who panted and cursed all the way back to the fortress. When Mistward was in sight, she told Luca only one thing before she sent him ahead. Keep his mouth shut about what had happened in the cave. The moment the sounds of him crashing through the brush had faded, she turned. Rowan was standing there, panting as well, his sword now sheathed. She plunged her new blade into the earth, the ruby in the hilt glowing in a patch of sunlight. I will kill you, she snarled, and launched herself at him. Even in her fey form, he was still faster than her, stronger, and dodged her with fluid ease. Slamming face first into the tree was better than colliding with the stone walls of the fortress, though not by much. Her teeth sang, but she whirled and lunged for Rowan again, now standing so close, his teeth bared. He couldn't dodge her as she grabbed him by the front of his jacket and connected. Oh, hitting him in the face felt good, even as her knuckles split and throbbed. He snarled and threw her to the ground. The air whooshed out of her chest, and the blood trickling out of her nose shot back down her throat. Before he could sit on her, she got her legs around him and shoved with every ounce of that immortal strength. And just like that, he was pinned, his eyes wide with what could only be fury and surprise. She hit him again, her knuckles barking in agony. If you ever again bring someone else into this, she panted, hitting him on his tattoo, on that god's damned tattoo. If you ever endanger anyone else the way you did today. The blood on her nose splattered on his face, mingling, she noted with some satisfaction, with blood from the blows she'd given him. I will kill you. Another strike, a backhanded blow, and it vaguely occurred to her that he had gone still and was taking it. I will rip out your rutting throat, she bared her canines. You understand? He turned his head to the side to spit blood. Her blood was pounding, so wild that every little restraint she'd locked into place shattered. She shoved back against it, and the distraction cost her. Rowan moved, and then she was under him again. She'd mangled his face, but he didn't seem to care as he growled, I will do whatever I please. You will keep other people out of it, she screamed, so loudly that the birds stopped chattering. She thrashed against him, gripping his wrists. No one else. Tell me why, Aelin. That god's damned name. She dug her nails into his wrists. Because I am sick of it! She was gulping down air, each breath shuddering as the horrific realization she'd been holding at bay since Nehemia's death came loose. I told her I would not help, so she orchestrated her own death. Because she thought... She laughed, a horrible, wild sound. She thought that her death would spur me into action. She thought I could somehow do more than her, that she was worth more dead. And she lied about everything. She lied to me because I was a coward, and I hate her for it. I hate her for leaving me. Rowan still pinned her, his warm blood dripping onto her face. She had said it, said the words she'd been choking on for weeks and weeks. The rage seeped from her like a wave pulling away from shore, and she let go of his wrists. Please, she panted, not caring that she was begging.
Please, don't bring anyone else into it. I will do anything you ask of me. But that is my line. Anything else but that.
His eyes were veiled as he finally let go of her arms. She gazed up at the canopy.
She would not cry in front of him. Not again.
He peeled back, the space between them now a tangible thing.
How did she die?
She let the moisture against her back seep into her, cool her bones.
She manipulated a mutual acquaintance into thinking he needed to kill her in order to further his agenda. He hired an assassin, made sure I wasn't around, and had her murdered.
Oh, Nehemia.
She had done it all out of a fool's hope, not realizing what a waste it was. She could have allied with flawless Galen Ashriver and saved the world, found a truly useful heir to the throne.
What happened to the two men?
A cold question. The assassin I hunted down and left in pieces in an alleyway. And the man who hired him. Blood on her hands, on her clothes, in her hair. Chaos' horrified stare. I gutted him and dumped his body in a sewer. They were two of the worst things she'd done. Out of pure hatred and vengeance and rage. She waited for the lecture. But Rowan merely said,
"Good."
She was so surprised that she looked at him and saw what she had done. Not his already bruised and bleeding face, or his ripped jacket and shirt, now muddy. But right where she'd gripped his forearms, the clothes were burned through, the skin beneath covered in angry red welts.
Handprints.
She'd burned right through the tattoo on his left arm. She was on her feet in an instant, wondering if she should be on her knees begging for forgiveness instead. It must have hurt like hell. Yet he had taken it. The beating. The burning. While she let out those words that had clouded her senses for so many weeks now.
"I am so sorry," she started.
But he held up a hand.
"You do not apologize," he said, "for defending the people you care about."
She supposed it was as much of an apology as she would ever get from him. She nodded, and he took that as answer enough.
"I'm keeping the sword," she said,
yanking it free of the earth. She'd be hard-pressed to find a better one anywhere in the world.
"You haven't earned it."
He fell silent, then added,
"But consider this a favor. Leave it in your rooms when we're training."
She would have debated, but this was a compromise too. She wondered if he'd made a compromise any time in the last century.
"What if that thing tracks us to the fortress once darkness falls?"
"Even if it does, it can't get past the wards."
When she raised her brows, he said,
"The stones around the fortress have a spell woven between them to keep out enemies. Even magic bounces off it."
"Oh."
Well, that explained why they called it Mistward. A calm, if not pleasant, silence fell between them while they walked. "You know," she said slyly, "that's twice now you've made a mess of my training with your tasks. I'm fairly sure that makes you the worst instructor I've ever had." He gave her a sidelong look.
"I'm surprised it took you this long to call attention to it."
She snorted, and as they approached the fortress, the torches and candles ignited, as if to welcome them home.
"I've never seen such a sorry sight," Emrys hissed,
as Rowan and Selena trudged into the kitchen.
"Blood and dirt and leaves over every inch of you both.
Indeed, they were something to behold, both their faces swollen and lacerated, covered in each other's blood, hair a mess, and Selena limping slightly. The knuckles of her two fingers were split, and her knee throbbed from an injury she did not recall getting.
"No better than alley cats brawling at all hours of the day and night," Emrys said, slamming two bowls of stew onto the work table. "Eat, both of you, and then get cleaned up. Alentia, you're off kitchen duty tonight and tomorrow."
Selena opened her mouth to object, but the old man held up a hand.
"I don't want you bleeding on everything. You'll be more trouble than you're worth."
Wincing, Selena slumped next to Rowan on the bench and swore viciously at the pain in her leg, her face, her arms. Swore at the pain in the ass sitting right next to her.
"Clean your mouth out, too, while you're at it," Emrys snapped.
Luca was huddled by the fire, wide-eyed and making a sharp, cutting gesture across his neck, as if to warn Selena about something. Even Malachi, seated at the other end of the table with two weathered sentries, was watching her with raised brows. Rowan was already hunched over the table, digging into his stew. She glanced again at Luca, who frantically tapped his ears. She hadn't shifted back. And, well, now they'd all noticed, even with the blood and dirt and leaves. Malachi met her stare, and she dared him, just dared the old man to say anything. But he shrugged and went back to his meal. So it really wasn't a surprise after all. She took a bite of her stew and had to bite back her moan. Was it her fey senses, or was it even more delicious tonight? Emrys was watching from the hearth, and Selena gave him that challenging look, too. She punched back through the veil, aching as she shifted into her mortal form. But the old man brought her and Rowan a loaf of bread and said,
"Makes no difference to me whether your ears are pointy or round, or what your teeth look like. But," he added, looking at Rowan, "I can't deny I'm glad to see you got in a few punches this time."
Rowan's head snapped up from his bowl, and Emrys pointed a spoon at him.
"Don't you think you've had enough of beating each other into a pulp?"
Malachi stiffened, but Emrys went on.
"What good does it accomplish, other than providing me with a scullery maid whose face scares the wits out of our sentries? You think any of us like to hear you two cursing and screaming every afternoon? The language you use is enough to curdle all the milk in Wendlin."
Rowan lowered his head and mumbled something into his stew. For the first time in a long, long while, Selena felt the corners of her lips tug up. And that was when Selena walked to the old man and got onto her knees. She apologized profusely. To Emrys, to Luca, to Malachi. Apologized because they deserved it. They accepted, but Emrys still looked wary. Hurt, even. The shame of what she'd said to that man, to all of them, would cling to her for a while. Though it made her stomach twist and palms sweat, though they didn't mention names, she wasn't all that surprised when Emrys told her that he and the other old fae knew who she was and that her mother had worked to help them. But she was surprised when Rowan took a spot at the sink and helped clean up after the evening meal. They worked in an easy silence. There were still truths she hadn't confessed to, stains on her soul she couldn't yet explore or express. But maybe he wouldn't walk away whenever she did find the courage to tell him. At the table, Luca was grinning with delight. Just seeing that smile, that bit of proof that today's events hadn't scarred him completely, made Selena look at Emrys and say, "We had an adventure today." Malachi set down his spoon and said,
"Let me guess. It had something to do with that roar that sent the livestock into pandemonium."
Though Selena didn't smile, her eyes crinkled.
What do you know of a creature that dwells in the lake under?
She glanced at Rowan to finish.
Bald Mountain. And he can't know that story, Rowan said. No one does.
I am a story keeper, Emrys said, staring down at him with all the wrath of one of the iron figurines on the mantle. And that means that the tales I collect might not come from fey or human mouths, but I hear them anyway.
He sat down at the table, folding his hands in front of him.
I heard one story, years ago, from a fool who thought he could cross the Cambrian Mountains and enter Maeve's realm without invitation. He was on his way back, barely clinging to life thanks to Maeve's wild wolves in the passes, so we brought him here while we sent for the healers.
Malachi murmured, "So that's why you wouldn't give him a moment's peace."
A twinkle in those old eyes, and Emrys gave his mate a wry smile.
He had a fierce infection, so at the time I thought it might have been a fever dream. But he told me he found a cave at the base of the Bald Mountain. He camped there, because it was raining and cold, and he planned to be off at first light. Still, he felt like something was watching him from the lake. He drifted off, and awoke only because the ripples were lapping against the shore, ripples from the center of the lake. And just beyond the light of his fire, out in the deep, he spied something swimming, bigger than a tree or any beast he'd ever seen.
Oh, it was horrific, Luca cut in. You said you were out with Bass and the other scouts on border patrol today,
Emrys barked, then gave Rowan a look that suggested he'd better test his next meal for poison. Emrys cleared his throat, and was soon staring at the table again, lost in thought.
What the fool learned that night was this. The creature was almost as old as the mountain itself. It claimed to have been born in another world, but had slipped into this one when the gods were looking elsewhere. It had preyed upon fey and humans until a mighty fey warrior challenged it. And before the warrior was through, he carved one of the creature's eyes out, for spite or sport, and cursed the beast, so that as long as that mountain stood, the creature would be forced to live beneath it.
A monster from another realm. Had it been let in during the Volg Wars, when demons had opened and closed portals to another world at will? How many of the horrific creatures that dwelled in this land were only here because of those long-ago battles over the word keys?
So it has dwelled in the labyrinth of underwater caves under the mountain. It has no name, for it forgot what it was called long ago. And those who meet it do not return home.
Selena rubbed her arms, wincing as the split skin of her knuckles stretched with the movement. Rowan was staring directly at Emrys, his head cocked ever so slightly to the side. Rowan glanced at her, as if to make sure she was listening, and asked,
"Who was the warrior who carved out its eye?" The fool didn't know, and neither did the beast, but the language it spoke was fey, an archaic form of the old language, almost indecipherable. It could remember the gold ring he bore, but not what he looked like.
It took every ounce of effort not to grab for her pocket and the ring she'd put in there, or to examine the sword she'd left by the door, and the ruby that might not be a ruby after all. But it was impossible. Too much of a coincidence. She might have given in to the urge to look, had Rowan not reached for his glass of water.
He hid it well, and she didn't think anyone else noticed. But as the sleeve of his jacket shifted, he winced, ever so slightly, from the burns she'd given him. They'd been blistering earlier. They must be screaming in agony now.
Emrys pinned the prince with a stare.
No more adventures.
Rowan glanced at Luca, who seemed about to explode with indignation.
Agreed.
Emrys didn't back down.
And no more brawling.
Rowan met Selena's stare over the table. His expression yielded nothing.
We'll try.
Even Emrys deemed that an acceptable answer. Despite the exhaustion that slammed into her like a wall, Selena couldn't sleep. She kept thinking of the creature, of the sword and the ring she'd examined for an hour without learning anything, and the control, however shaky, she'd managed to have on the ice. Yet she kept circling back to what she'd done to Rowan, how badly she'd burned him. His pain tolerance must be tremendous, she thought, as she twisted on her cot, huddled against the cold in the room. She eyed her tin of salve. He should have gone to a healer for those burns. She tossed and turned for another 5 minutes before she yanked on her boots, grabbed the tin, and left. She'd probably get her head bitten off again, but she wouldn't get a wink of sleep if she were too busy feeling guilty. Gods, she felt guilty. She knocked softly on his door, half hoping he wasn't there. But he snapped, "What?" And she winced and went in. His room was toasty and warm, if not a little old and shabby, especially the worn rugs thrown over much of the gray stone floor. A large four-poster bed occupied much of the space, a bed that was still made and empty. Rowan was seated at the work table in front of the carved fireplace, shirtless and examining what looked to be a map marked with the locations of those bodies. His eyes flashed with annoyance, but she ignored him as she studied the massive tattoo that went from his face down his neck and shoulders and covered the entirety of his left arm, straight to his fingertips. She hadn't really looked that day in the woods, but now she marveled at its beautiful unbroken lines, save for the manacle-like burn around his wrist. Both wrists.
What do you want?
She hadn't inspected his body too closely before, either. His chest, tan enough to suggest he spent a good amount of time without a shirt, was sculpted with muscle and covered in thick scars. From fights or battles or the gods knew what. A warrior's body that he'd had centuries to hone. She tossed the salve to him. I thought you might want this. He caught it with one hand, but his eyes remained on her.
I deserved it.
Doesn't mean I can't feel bad. He turned the tin over and over between his fingers. There was a particularly long and nasty scar down his right pectoral. Where had it come from?
Is this a bribe?
Give it back if you're going to be a pain in my ass. She held out her hand. But he closed his fingers around the tin, then set it on his work table. He said,
You could heal yourself, you know. Heal me, too. Nothing major, but you have that gift.
She knew, sort of. Her magic had sometimes healed her injuries without conscious thought. It's the drop of water affinity I inherited from Mab's line. The fire had been the gift of her father's bloodline. My mother. The words made her sick, but she said them for some reason. Told me that the drop of water in my magic was my salvation and sense of self-preservation. A nod from him, and she admitted, I wanted to learn to use it like the other healers. Long ago, I mean. But was never allowed to. They said, Well, it wouldn't be all that useful since I didn't have much of it, and queens don't become healers. She should stop talking. For some reason, her stomach dropped as he said,
Go to bed. Since you're banned from the kitchen tomorrow,
We're training at dawn.